All right, welcome everyone to Third Thursday. And I want to give special welcome to our guests, Carl Richardson and Kristen Lee. And they're going to be talking with us tonight about hearing loss and the I Can Connect program. And then we'll have a time for questions. So you two can figure out who's going to go first.
Hi, my name is Carl Richardson. I'm a member of the Bay State Council of the Blind. I consider myself to be deaf-blind in that I have a dual sensory loss of hearing and vision. I've been hard of hearing my whole entire life, and I became legally blind in my 30s. But I have been wearing hearing aids since the age of 4. So I've been wearing hearing aids for more than 50 years. I was originally approached by Sharon to talk about recent legislation that passed that allowed for the purchase of over-the-counter hearing aids, which are much cheaper and more affordable. I'm not an expert in over-the-counter hearing aid, but I'll be happy to tell you what I know. And then I'll also tell you about how I get my hearing aid through a full-service audiologist. First, why did the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, want to pass legislation? And the Reauthorization Act of 2017, allowing for the over-the-counter, or otherwise known as OTC, hearing aid. One, because when people first come down with a hearing loss, it takes an average of 7 to 10 years for people to do anything about it. Approximately, according to the latest census, about 20% of Americans have a hearing loss. I would argue that maybe in the blind community, it might even be higher than that as we get older, because we all listen to things like our Victor Reader and microphones and headphones, and that might lead to hearing. And unlike when we were young, if you listen to analog, when you cranked up the volume, things would get distorted, so you cranked it down. With digital, you can crank it as loud as you want, and you'll still have a good quality sound, which is going to lead to a progressive hearing loss. So a number, and the other thing hearing loss lead to is depression, falls. People that have hearing loss tend to fall more, and more confusion with the thought process. And those who have a dual sensory loss, they've even done studies that it lead to a higher rate of dementia as we age. So that one of the reasons why the FDA wanted to come out with over-the-counter hearing aids is because those in the elderly community, those that are older, couldn't necessarily afford regular hearing aids, and they were the demand and cry for this to happen. So this was done. Now, over-the-counter hearing aid, you cannot purchase until, you heard me say I've been wearing hearing aids since the age of 4. You can't purchase over-the-counter hearing aids. They're only for adults 18 and over. I mean, if you're a child, you can't. You have to be over the age of 18 and older. You can buy them in stores and online. You do not have to have a prescription for them. And they are a lot more limited in terms of technology, in terms of what they provide, compared to that of a regular hearing aid. They tend to make things just louder. They do have to give you at least volume control, some treble control and bass. I think it's kind of similar to that on your Victor Reader. You can control the volume, the treble, the bass, that sort of thing. And they're not necessarily customizable or fitting to your ear, and you have to have the ability to do it yourself because you're just paying for the hearing aid. And an over-the-counter hearing aid will cost anywhere between an average, from what I've read, between $300 and $600 a piece. So if you need a pair, that's $600 to $1,200 a pair versus the one I just bought 3 months ago for $6,000. So it's a significant price, but they tend to just amplify. You don't have as much programming. The other important thing is they are only meant for those from mild to moderate hearing loss. So I, for instance, wouldn't even qualify for over-the-counter hearing aid because I'm in the severe range and in terms of hearing loss. So And they do, some of the hearing aid, over-the-counter hearing aid, do come with the ability to do a sound check, I guess, that's built into it. And you, you know, you let it know what you hear, and you, and it will try to figure out what you hear based on that. It is recommended that only maybe people with a starting hearing loss get these, but if your hearing loss gets worse, you really do need to see a qualified audiologist. The other thing is, I'm not saying I'm against over-the-counter hearing aid, but I would probably at least get a hearing test to see if I'm a candidate for over-the-counter hearing aid. As those who have insurance, you can usually get a hearing test paid for. So you don't need a hearing test to get over-the-counter hearing aid. So an audiologist, the difference between over-the-counter and other audiologist is over-the-counter, you have to figure out how to use the hearing aid, how to make it work for you, where an audiologist will walk with you throughout the whole entire process. They're usually very well educated. They usually have a doctorate degree. And they represent a reputable audiologist will represent multiple brands of hearing aid, because different hearing aids do different things. I've had many brands over the years as my hearing loss has changed and as my needs have changed. And an audiologist will be with you before you get a hearing aid, during, and after, throughout the life of your purchase. It is significantly more expensive, but for instance, the hearing aids I just bought 4 months ago, I have already had my two. First of all, the first thing they do is you sit down and you meet with your audiologist. You explain you have a hearing loss, where you're having trouble with it, how you're having trouble with your hearing loss, what you think you need it for, that sort of thing, whether it be, you know, background noise, conversation, because that's what I was getting at, to different hearing aids do different things and are better. For instance, I just switched from hearing aids that most hearing aids, because most hard of hearing people are sighted, filter out quite a bit of background noise. Because when people that are hard of hearing go to wearing hearing aids, they get overwhelmed with all the noises. I, as a deafblind person, and I'm counting, my definition of deafblind is wider than many. Anybody with a dual sensory loss, in my opinion, is deafblind. My need as a deafblind person, as I need to cross the street, I need to hear traffic, though. I need to hear the background noises, though. I specifically sought out hearing aids to have different philosophies that don't filter out those noises. So I sat down with the audiologist, because my hearing loss had gone from mild as a child to moderate, maybe when I was in my 20s and 30s, now to severe in my 40s and 50s, and probably will be profound. But a good audiologist can walk with you from mild to moderate to severe to profound, and have a hearing aid to handle all those situations. So they sit down. After you sit down and discuss with them, they will do a hearing test where you sit in a soundproof booth, usually, and they will do a hearing test from modulations of frequency, the beep, you know, where they want to hear what frequency range you hear at what decibels, to they'll do different words that have different combinations of vowels and consonants, so they can figure out which consonants and vowels you hear, which tells them which frequency. For instance, I do not hear high frequency, so I do not hear my consonants, so I do not hear my T's, my S's, my P's, which is why I often mispronounce them. Because I so where my sister Annie is also hard of hearing, but she misses the vowels, you know, so everybody has different types of hearing loss. So based on the audiogram, you'll then sit down with your audiologist and you'll discuss different options of different hearing aids, okay? And today it's more complicated than ever, because they do Bluetooth. Some do Bluetooth to everything. Some do Bluetooth only to the iPhone. Some do Bluetooth to the Android. So it's complicated. Some can do what's called a T-coil switch. Some cannot. So you really do need to sit down and do your research and talk to you. And then after you agree on the hearing aid, you'll agree on the type, whether it's in the ear, around the ear, because of my hearing loss, I can't get in the ear. I'm also old school. I like a mold in my ear that sits in my ear completely. So I sit down and they'll literally pour like a putty in my ear. And I'll sit there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes in each ear while the putty hardens up. And they'll get a mold of the inside of my ear. So I'll get customizable fitted hearing aid for my hearing loss. And then once I get the hearing aid, I'll sit down with the audiologist and we will literally program the hearing aid for my type of hearing loss. For instance, there are some sounds, not many, but there are some sounds that I hear as well as you do. We won't amplify those types of sounds. And then there are some sounds that I don't hear at all. We'll bring that up, volume up loud. And then there are some situations where I want to eliminate the bass. So we'll actually, on my hearing aid, I actually have an outdoor setting. I have an indoor setting. I have a party setting. I have a, so I have different settings. And I also have a microphone that the audiologist provided to me so that when I'm in a, let's say I'm at a conference table, I can put a microphone down on the conference table and the sound will go directly to my hearing aid. So, and I've already been back to the audiologist to change the tube that goes from the mold to the application device, if you will, that goes around the ear. And she'll switch the tubing out. I've been back to her several times because these are brand new hearing aids and I'm still learning how to use them to reprogram them. And that part of that $6,000 fee where I paid $3,000 a piece, I don't pay for the new mold. I don't pay for every time I go, well, I guess I pay in the initial price, but she is with me throughout the care of the hearing aid. And you get a 3-year warranty when you first purchase the hearing aid. And I can do almost anything. I can break them. I can destroy them. They cannot work. I send them in. I don't pay anything. And they usually have backup hearing aid for me to wear while I'm waiting to get new hearing aid. So the nice thing about the audiologist is they're educated. They can walk you through a number of options and they can help you stop your hearing loss from getting worse. So I'm not necessarily against over-the-counter hearing aids. It's just that I'm not a candidate for them, so it's not something I've explored in detail. But I would recommend those for those who may be considering it. And I think, you know, maybe it's a good entry level. But find out first how severe your hearing loss is and go from there. So again, the main difference is with over-the-counter, you can buy those anywhere. You do not need a prescription, unlike you do with hearing aid from the audiologist. They're significantly cheaper. Mainly, they amplify. They don't have as many capabilities as the new hearing aid do. They're able to do less technologically, but they were meant by the FDA to get people to think about amplification devices because most people wait an average of 7 to 10 years to get hearing aids. And by waiting, you have other issues that are later unforeseen, such as falls, depression, cognitive issues. And if you can't afford hearing aids and insurance doesn't always pay for hearing aids, then I guess over the counter, if you are a person with a mild to moderate hearing loss only, is a good first step. If you have a more significant hearing loss, or something like me where I have Usher's, it's more of a diagnosed thing. It's not something I ate into and I slowly lost my hearing. I would recommend an audiologist. You want a hearing aid that can meet all your needs. They're prescribed. It is more money. I mean, even thank God my wife makes double what I make because she bought the hearing aid. That's the journey. And like I said, I've been wearing a hearing aid all my life from the age of 4 on. I started out with one hearing aid when I was a kid, just in the ear. And then after college, I went from one hearing aid to 2 hearing aids, both in the ear. And then about 15 years ago, I went to around the ear because my hearing loss got more significant. To recently, I just got the next level for Sevilla here in Lost, and now I'm only one hearing aid model away from Profound, and we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that we won't get there, but at the rate of hearing loss, I'm probably will be there, and may even have to consider cochlear implants someday. But I know that was a lot of information, and I hope you guys found that interesting.
Thank you, Carl. I think before we take questions, we'll ask Kristen to speak, and then we'll have raised hands and go from there.
Thank you for inviting me to talk to you guys about the ICANN Connect program. I want to just give you a very brief background and overview so that we have plenty of time for questions for Carl or for any questions that you might have about the program. And then maybe I could email my contact information, and we could maybe that would be easier than, you know, everybody trying to write it down if anybody, you know, wants to follow up later with questions. So the ICANN Connect program is for people with combined vision and hearing loss. And it was created out of the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act that was passed in 2010. And so now the program is in its 11th year, and it's a federal program administered by the Federal Communications Commission. And there is service in every state and U.S. territory. So there's sort of 56 programs that make up the whole, you know, nationwide ICANN Connect program. And the services for Massachusetts and Rhode Island are coordinated by Perkins, which is where I work. And Perkins administers the program in 21 other states. We work with trainers and local organizations in those states to administer the program. So the main goal is to provide access to any type of electronic distance communication. And the eligibility requirements are a combined hearing and vision loss, which, you know, meets the general definition of deaf blindness. But there's, as Carl said, a wide range of levels of hearing loss, and same with vision loss. But somebody would still qualify as long as the combined loss impacts other activities of, you know, daily life and ability to communicate and independence and those sorts of things. And there is a financial eligibility component. The program is funded for people who meet the low income guidelines, similar to other federal programs. And the application includes the income amounts, and it's based on the number of people in the household. So there's not like an exact number. It depends. And those get updated every year. So I always encourage people, if they think they might qualify, to always check and see if you meet the requirements, if you're in need of any type of technology for phone communications, electronic communications like email and internet, anything that's two-way distance communication. So the way the program works is somebody would fill out the application, which is some basic background information and a disability attestation that would be completed by somebody who can you just document that you have the combined hearing and vision loss. And then once someone is accepted into the program, they would receive an individualized assessment from one of the trainers. And at that point, they could look at some of the different types of equipment and discuss their individual goals for improved communication access. So it could be things as simple as a landline phone with amplification, or, you know, buttons with large print or more tactile buttons, those types of things, to, you know, computers, braille displays. Smartphones are very popular, iPads, other types of tablets. And of course, software for magnification and screen readers. So the initial assessment would kind of identify the equipment and the training goals. And then the program provides assistance with, you know, setting up the equipment, training, support as needed after the initial training in terms of if something needs to be repaired, or, you know, sometimes, you know, people experience changes in their, you know, vision or hearing and maybe would need some different equipment, or, you know, now that the program's in its 11th year, you know, there's people who have old equipment and need, you know, new updated devices to replace things that have become obsolete. So I guess sort of the key points are that it's very individualized, which is unique. And it's not, there aren't any requirements in terms of having, you know, job goals or education. Its primary purpose is for, you know, personal communications. But it doesn't cover like face-to-face communication for assistive listening devices, like Carl was describing, where you might have a microphone to put like on a table at a meeting to, you know, hear somebody who's speaking, you know, in the room where you are.
Thank you, Kristen.
Oh yeah, I guess that's enough for an overview, and I'd love to take any sure. questions that anybody has.
Barbara Black.
So I actually wanted to just add a few things to what, Carl, what you said was really helpful, but I wanted to add a little bit. One is that as someone who also has a severe hearing loss and wears hearing aids, so I guess I fall in that deafblind category, there are two email groups that have useful information. One is the Blind Hearing Aid Users Group. And people on that one often ask really like questions about ranging from what do I do about wax in my ears to how do you connect this to that and, you know, to your iPhone or your whatever. So it's really useful. It's called the Blind Hearing Aid Users, and it's one of those groups that we're in hundreds of. And then the other one is an ACB affiliate, I guess. It's SASI, Sound and Sight Impaired. And I just only started getting stuff from them. But, you know, those they're good resources. And the other thing is that, and I don't know if Carl or if other people have had this experience, but I've sometimes been able to get the commission to pay for hearing aids and sometimes not. So it seems I'm not sure what the difference is in the times I could and the times I couldn't, but it's absolutely worth asking. Because, you know, as Carl said, it's a $6,000 investment. It's huge. And they do periodically, you need to get new ones. So I just think that's important to know.
Carl has his hand raised. Maybe he has an answer for you.
So I had my hand raised because I actually had a question for Kristen, but I will respond quickly to Barbara. I did just get a $1,000 check for my hearing aid from MCB, so that brought down my cost to $5,000. I don't know what their criteria is nowadays for paying for hearing aids and not paying. I think mine might be different because I'm already employed. You know, I don't have an open VR case. So I think it depends where you are within the system, whether you're an open case, you're looking for work, that sort of thing. But I did get $1,000, and I was very happy to get that $1,000. So that
yeah, I would be too.
The other thing is, go ahead.
There was an over 55 fund that, so it, you know, being old might be helpful in terms of getting more from the commission in this case. But I don't know if that's still exists.
Right. And I also know the veteran, if anybody's a veteran, I think they have resources. If I had the honor of being involved in legislation that passed about 10 years ago that allowed for insurance for hearing aid for children in school, K through 12. I was very proud of that, actually, because if you can't hear, you can't learn. And so a lot of families and parents couldn't afford to buy hearing aid for their children, and the kids were falling through the cracks. And now insurance. So basically, if you're between the ages of 18 and 65, you're screwed. But my question for Kristen is, you said that the iKing Connect program pays for communication devices such as Braille displays and phones and other things. Here's my point. If I take out my hearing aids, I'm not having a conversation with any of you. I'm just not, because I can't hear you guys talk to me. Why aren't hearing aids considered a communication device, since I cannot even begin to communicate without my hearing aids?
Yeah.
So my understanding is that the FCC that, you know, administers the program covers, you know, communication equipment. And I think that they've feel that hearing aids are covered by other federal funding sources. And I don't know if that depends on, you know, what state you're in, or if there are other low-income programs for hearing aids. I suspect that the difference may have to do with, you know, income levels in terms of what's funded.
Yeah. Can I jump in?
Absolutely.
Medicaid may pay for hearing aids. Medicare does not.
That's correct.
Yes.
So
I think that's,
you know, it's very tricky. I mean, so maybe if you're poor enough and can get, in our case, MassHealth, you might be able to get hearing aids. But if you're not quite poor enough, and even if you're old, Medicare won't pay for them.
Okay, Alice has her hand up. You want to unmute?
Yes, thank you. I recently got hearing aids, and I'd just like to share that my insurance company, Blue Cross, by the way, does have, and it's a HMO Medicare supplement, does have a very generous copay. Basically, for $6,000 hearing aids, I paid roughly $2,000, which, you know, is still expensive, but much better. They did dictate where I had to go for my hearing aids, however. And when I first got them, the person that helped me didn't know anything about she didn't really know anything about audio description when I asked questions about, because I read the booklets and it said not to put a headset over hearing aids. I reached out to the Bay State Council actually, and Carl helped me and told me about this T-coil thing. So I went back for my next appointment and I mentioned the T-coil. Apparently, the hearing aids that I had been fitted for didn't have a T-coil option, but it was still during the trial period. So they swapped them out without any further cost to me. But that would have been very important for somebody to ask in advance, because if you don't have the T-coil, I think, although I haven't tried to use them yet for audio description, and I'm looking forward to that, that's something that it would have been a costly omission. The other thing is that voiceover with Bluetooth, voiceover goes right to my hearing aids. And that's been very useful, because I never liked wearing earbuds. And then finally, I was able to get rechargeable hearing aids, because it was felt that with my vision loss, I would not be able to easily replace the batteries. I don't know if anybody has any comment about that, but these have worked really well. I'm still kind of getting used to them, but I'm not sure I understand the T-coil thing. If anybody has
any comments. I'll be happy to explain that when you're done.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you. And thanks for having thanks for having this program, Sharon.
So first of all, I think the rechargeable hearing aid versus the battery hearing aid is a personal choice. For instance, I will not get rechargeable. It's not that I don't believe they work, but let's say I forget to charge them and they die. There's nothing I can do. If they die, I can't talk, I can't get home on the bus, whatever, I'm in trouble. Where a sighted hearing person could navigate, I can't. So I always have batteries in my pocket. You will never see me without batteries in my pocket. So if my hearing aid die, I can literally swap out the batteries in 30 seconds. And boom, I'm back to hearing again. But my wife, in her mid-50s, just became hard of hearing. She wasn't born hard of hearing. She wasn't hard of hearing for the first 55 years of her life. She is now wearing hearing aids. She loves the rechargeable one because she doesn't want to be bothered with the concept of purchasing batteries and carrying them in her pocket. So it's an individual choice. Regarding T-coil technology, it's funny because it's very ubiquitous over in Europe, because many more people wear hearing aids in Europe because insurance covered them. T-coil technology is actually very, very old technology that's about 50 years old, because it goes back to the days of when we had copper wires in our telephone. And one of the ways they made it so that hearing aid users could hear better on the telephone was to put a T-coil switch on your hearing aid that would resonate with the copper wires in the phone, so therefore the sound would go directly to your hearing aid. So it's actually quite old. So now how T-coil is used is, for instance, I have a number of rooms at the stay house where I have laid underneath the carpet copper wires coated with a rubber coating underneath the rug. And if you click the T-coil switch on your hearing aid, the sound will go directly to the hearing aid when people are speaking into the microphone. Now, I'm sorry, I forget the name of the individual that was just speaking. What she was talking about is you can also get a T-coil neck loop with a 3.5 millimeter jack that I have, and I sometimes wear, for instance, when I'm walking around the house, I'll wear my Victor Reader Stream with my earbud, but it cuts out all outside noise. I won't do that out on the street, but I may listen to my Victor Reader Stream out on the street. So what I do is I put my neck loop, wear it around my neck, plug it into the Victor Reader Stream, activate the T-coil switch, and I can still hear some amplification, but also hear the Victor reader. And for those who can't wear earbuds, having a neck loop and a T-coil switch programmed into your hearing, and nowadays it's not so much as a physical button as a program, so you have to make sure the hearing aid you buy have the ability, but I would never buy a set of hearing aids without the T-coil. And I'll give you an example. When I was in London a few years back, I rode the double-decker buses. And my wife said, Carl, there's a sign that the buses are looped for T-coil. So I said, oh, really? So I clicked on the T-coil program, and I can hear all the announcements and the stop. I actually started crying because that's not something I always hear when I'm on a bus or a subway with all the background noise. I went to hear a Baroque concert and an old crypt where a bunch of royalty was buried in London. And they wired up a T-coil, and they had a string quartet playing classical music. And I activated the T-coil switch because the building was looped. And my wife saw me having a tear, and she said, what's wrong? And I said, I've never heard music this clear before. So I'm a big fan of induction coil loop or T-coil loop when it is possible. Sometimes if I want to make sure I hear background, like if I need to hear the, normally when I'm on the computer with JAWS, I wear earbuds. But if I want to, like if I have to hear a doorbell, I'll plug a neck loop into the computer and activate my T-coil switch on my hearing aid. I can hear JAWS, I can hear back. So the advantages of T-coil, and also the amplification goes directly to your hearing aid. When I go to the ACB conventions and I borrow an assistive listening device, I'm using a neck loop plugged into the ALD rather than earbud. So I know that's a long-winded explanation, but I just wanted to explain. It all started from the days of being able to talk on the telephone, and they've taken that technology and used it for other reasons.
Jeanette, you're next on the list, so let's do you.
All right. So, Carl, my question is about the T-coil. The way my hearing aids are set up now, I have to choose either to hear them like in my ears directly from my iPhone, or I have to turn everything off and hear my iPhone on speaker. Are you telling me that if T-coil were an option for the hearing aids that I have, that I wouldn't have to choose between the two?
I'm somewhat misunderstanding you. So are you saying that?
I'm saying I have to either choose between hearing my hearing aids directly in my ears, through the hearing aid program, or I have to turn the hearing aid program off and use an earbud.
Okay. So, yeah. You're talking about what type of device are you talking about? Like a phone or anything?
Like for an iPhone or for a Victor Stream.
Yeah, so as long as you had a neck loop with a 3.5 millimeter, now the iPhones don't have 3.5 millimeter jack, so you'd have to get an adapter. But yes, you could plug in the neck loop, keep your hearing aid on, activate your T-coil switch, absolutely.
And just for anybody else who wonders about, I have the rechargeables, and I think it's the biggest mistake I made in my life. I should have gotten the ones with hearing, with batteries. I was told blind people couldn't change them by an audiologist who really didn't know any better, and she refused to let me try. And when I get mine replaced, I will get hearing aids with batteries.
So,
because I have been in the situation you've talked about, Carl, where I needed them and they would not charge properly, and I was stuck.
So,
wait a minute.
One of the big drivers behind rechargeable batteries was the elderly community who did have difficulty changing batteries. So I'm not saying, Jeanette, you're one of those people, because I know you well enough to know that you could change batteries. But they are small. You do have to have good use of motor skills in your hand. And that, you know, so that would, and so it's the elderly. And it's funny, the hearing aids are getting smaller in terms of profile. They now come in multiple colors to match your hair color. So sighted people often can't even tell if you have hearing aids on, because if they are gray or silver or brown or black, you know. So it's funny, the elderly community are driving the fad that you see in the hearing aid, because they're the largest purchasers of hearing aids. But yes, if you can buy, and you can buy a neck loop, a T-coil neck loop on Amazon, and I don't know what they go for probably $30. So I haven't bought one in years because I've had the same one. But you know, and I used it. I don't carry it with me everywhere now because of the pandemic. I kind of forget to. But I mean, I could walk up to an ATM and just plug the neck loop into the ATM and use the ATM, you know.
Russell Myra. Andrews.
We had a speaker on last year from the Lions Club, and they talked about sight aids. And then at the end, they said hearing aids. And I'm there, I perked up at that point and said, oh, okay. So they bought me Sonic hearing aids, paid for everything. And man that saw that I actually got them from was actually bragging that they were $8,000. And so this was just before the bill passed that, you know, you can sell them over the counter. I don't know if they were just gouging it or what the story
no,
was.
No, no, no. And what your hearing aid, the Phonak, they would still cost $6,000 or $7,000. Those aren't over the counter hearing aid.
No, they're $8,000.
No, well, you probably had some other peripherals to go with the hearing aid?
No.
Okay.
No, they're rechargeable. They didn't even give me a case to put them in that, you know, I keep everything together. They have a couple of different cases, and they don't really fit well. Kind of. But anyhow, there's four channels. And so for me, my hearing loss is, I'm not even sure if I'd call it moderate. But they, you know, they paid for everything. They set me up. I've got Bluetooth. They are rechargeable. And you can replace the rechargeable batteries. So even if you do have rechargeables on these, you can just slide open the door, pop the battery out, pop in a new one, and you're on your way. So I used them last week at our holiday luncheon. And it was quite uncomfortable. I had to keep turning them down further and further and further and trying different channels. And I was very disappointed that you can't really tune out background noise with these.
So have you gone to the audiologist and explained the environment? You're right. To a point, you can't. But she can or he can do certain things and try to program different settings to tune out some noises. Have you gone back and tried to work with the audiologist on different settings?
Twice.
Okay.
Yep. And I've just come down to the point where I mostly use them for Bluetooth. And yep. Then, you know, I use them, well, if I'm outside and I want to hear the birds singing, the beepers beeping, it's fabulous to be able to hear those again. So there are some real nice conveniences to them to be able to hear things again that are far away. So, you know, that's been my experience with them. And I don't really have any questions. I don't know about the T-loop thing. They never talked about that. But I can put headphones right over my hearing aids and I don't get feedback or anything like that.
Also, some people should check on whether their hearing aids have this capability. It's called a DAI, a digital audio interface. where I had them actually, I don't want to get too wonky here, but I actually had them remove the battery door, put on a smaller battery door, and give me a dongle for both hearing aids that I can then plug into an audio device. So that's another thing you can look into. Some of the hearing aids allow for dongle to plug into devices. So you really got to talk to your audiologist. That's why I highly recommend you look. See, some audiologists don't go into telling you all these things. In fact, my audiologist gets frustrated with me because I'm often questioning her and challenging her on everything. But I don't think that they're used to saying these things to some of those in the, again, I'm not saying the elderly people aren't capable of learning new things, but some of them get overwhelmed by the concept of, you know, induction coil or T coil, digital audio interface, Bluetooth. It's a lot for them. So I find that audiologists tend to just try to get them comfortable with the concept of hearing aids and don't always tell them everything. I have a quick question for Kristen, if people don't mind.
I have one more, just one more thing. I've been told that the earlier you start wearing hearing aids, once you do need them, the your hearing will last longer. I was wondering if that
studies have shown if you go, the earlier you get hearing aids, the better. And because if you don't, it will lead to increased hearing loss at a faster rate. So absolutely, that is true.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I'm complete. And thanks so much, Sharon, for doing this and the two presenters. I appreciate it.
So
Cindy has her hand raised. Okay.
Sorry. No, okay, go ahead.
Okay, Cindy, you have your hand raised?
Okay, I do.
Okay.
Carl, I just have what I thought was a basic question. Now I'm thinking maybe it's a good, really good question. And it would be, how would I go about finding a reputable audiologist?
Well, you could check with your ENT. You could check with Mass Eye and Ear. I don't really know because I've been seeing the same one for years. Where do you live, Cindy?
Close enough to you.
We can talk offline and I can make some recommendations.
All right.
Okay.
Yep.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Send me an email.
Oh, okay. Hamlock, you're up.
I'm deaf in my left ear totally and have hearing loss in my right. So I wear a hearing aid in the right ear. My question is, well, one, I agree with Russell. I was at the same luncheon and I could not hear anybody. It was extremely frustrating and difficult to try to communicate with anybody at all. And then the other question is that, is there a way to watch TV and have the sound of the TV go directly into your hearing aid?
Yeah. So depending on the brand or the manufacturer of your hearing aid, they all sell proprietary equipment that you can plug into your TV set that'll go straight to your hearing aid. So what brand hearing aid do you have?
It's a Widex.
So Widex are a popular enough brand. So I would reach out to whoever sold you the hearing aid and see if they sell ancillary equipment that go to most of the Widex is the big name. Redom, Phonak, Oticon. They all sell devices that can connect to your TV to go to your hearing aid. I went to Best Buy and literally bought an FM transmitter with the big over-the-ear headphones that we all wore in the 70s and 80s and just plugged that into my TV set, and I use that, and I love it. I mean, it means I'm not going to be able to talk to the person next to me, but that's okay. My wife and I watch different TV shows, never watch TV.
Exactly.
So you know, I literally went to Best Buy, bought this set for $90, and that's what I use. But I will tell you that most of the major hearing aid manufacturers do sell equipment that will go straight to your hearing aid from the TV set.
I just bought a smart TV. They have a Bluetooth, so I didn't know if using the Bluetooth on my hearing aid would also connect with the Bluetooth on the TV.
It depends. Some hearing aid, I'm not familiar enough with the Widec product, so that's again a question you may want to ask your audiologist. And if they don't know the answer, your audiologist should be able to call the manufacturer and ask. Okay. So I'm not, again, there's a lot of brands out there and I'm not familiar with that. So I apologize.
Right.
Okay. Linda Faust, you're up.
Okay. Hold on.
We hear you.
Excuse me 1 minute. I just want to say that we're just about at 9. And if people are comfortable staying on, that's perfectly fine. Carl and Kristen, if you can. Is that all right with you?
Fine with me.
Yeah, I don't have a social life. I'm okay. Fine.
All right. Go ahead, Linda.
Go right ahead. There are a couple. Yes. Can you hear me now? Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Okay. There are several things. I have several. Well, first of all, I have a suggestion about the mic. I have a Starkey hearing aid, you know, a real good one that I got a couple years ago, and I haven't upgraded my hearing aid because their apps, most hearing aid apps are not user-friendly for screen readers. But I do have a remote mic that I use when I watch TV. I have a Roku TV, and I can, you know, plug the TV in the headphone jack, so nobody hears it except me. And if I'm watching TV with my provider, a movie, sometimes we get together as friends, and we'll put the mic, you know, between the two speakers on the TV, the remote mic, and I hear it directly in my hearing aids. And the other thing is, I had a question about the neck loop thing. You're saying that it's possible to use a neck loop without wearing hearing aids plug it to a picture reader? Hello?
You have to be wearing hearing aid.
Okay.
Okay. Well, and you have
my
to
hearing
have
aids, they're supposedly compliant, whatever you call it, that have the neck loop already in it.
So they have a T-coil switch.
T-coil.
The neck loop is a separate device. It's literally a loop that plugs into with a 3.5 millimeter, male plug that would plug in it. And then you put the loop around your neck, okay? Uh-huh. And it's usually like 3-4 feet long. So it's plenty long enough to reach your victory reader on the belt and go around your neck comfortably. And then... you activate the T-coil switch on your hearing aid, and the sound will go straight to your hearing aid.
Yeah, I don't have a T-coil switch.
Well, it's more of a program. See, when we switch from analog to digital, you probably do have a switch on the Starkey that allow you to alternate between programs. So nowadays, it's more of a program than it isn't. I mean, there's a button you push, but nowadays, it's more of a program. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think I have a T-coil program. I know I don't.
Okay.
But will I need a neck loop if I wanted to go to Framingham or somewhere to see a movie? Because my provider and I tried to see what they had for equipment, and they handed me these headphones, and it didn't do anything.
Right.
And I heard that according to ADA that theaters and movie theaters have to provide that kind of technology.
So the movie theaters do have to provide, and you're talking probably, are you talking amplified audio or audio description?
Both, actually. But, you know, if I had to pick between one and the other, I would pick audio description. But
they do have to provide the equipment, but they normally provide it with earbuds or a headset. So I would recommend, if they provide the kind that has an input, Sometimes they provide headsets only, it depends. But if they provide the ones that have an input jack, you're better off carrying your own neck loop, because to ask a 16-year-old kid at a movie theater who's making minimum wage, do you have a T-coil loop, is often a fruitless exercise.
So, should I get a neck loop from an audiologist or from Amazon?
You can order one for either. I mean, they're standard enough that you can get them on Amazon, but your audiologist should be able to get one also.
Okay, so if I go to a movie theater, you're saying
but Linda,
I would need a neck loop to hook up to the headphone.
Only if your hearing aid has T-coil capability. If it does not, then a neck loop is no good.
It does.
But I thought you told me it didn't a minute ago.
Okay, my audiologist said, yes, it does. However, I do not have a setting, you know, that I could just, you know, call a T-coil switch or whatever you know, I don't have that. You know, I have normal, I have, crowd, restaurant, music, blah, blah, you know, nothing that says T-coil.
So she can probably add that program if your hearing aid has that capability. I would check with her.
I will. Thank you.
I have a question.
Can I ask a quick question of Kristen? Because I feel like...
Sure. Carl, you go first, and then we'll go to Sandy. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Kristen. So I'm on the Disability Advisory Committee for the FTC that oversees the I Can Connect program. And I'm always hearing from the FTC that it's their favorite part of the CVAA. You know, the CVAA covers audio description, closed captioning, telephone accessibility, but they say they love this because of the personal impact it has made on the deafblind community. Without getting into names and confidentiality, is there a general story you can tell us where you've seen firsthand how the I Can Connect program has made a difference in someone's life?
Actually, that's a great question. We have a wonderful collection of sort of consumer profiles on the website, where there's little short descriptions and some quotes from consumers of how the equipment and training has impacted their lives.
Can you give an example?
Yes. We have a great story about a gentleman. I can't remember which state he's in, but he, during the pandemic, he was able to see his grandchild through a Zoom meeting, and connect with his family. We have a lot of stories like that where people are able to, use FaceTime and, you know, connect with their grandchildren, family members, or even just using their computers to get assistance with getting groceries delivered and things like that. A couple of examples where some people that had been classmates years ago were able to meet up again at an event, a community event for deafblind people. If you go to icanconnect.org, I think there's a link, I believe it's labeled success stories, I think. And there's just a wide range of short little snippets.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, Sandy.
Yeah, let's go next.
Yeah, hi, Sandy.
Oh, okay, I'm here. First of all, I am a happy I Can Connect consumer. I'm sitting here with my Brilliant BI 20X, which I got a few months ago from I Can Connect in my lap, and my new iPhone from I Can Connect, which I did not get that long ago either. First of all, Jeanette, we were talking about T-coils and using them with your Bluetooth on your phone or whatever. I can keep my hearing aid on Bluetooth, switch to my T-coil program, and everything still comes into through my hearing aids, like into my head. So that works fine. As for buying hearing aids, I'm in my 70s. I started losing my hearing aid in my 30s. I'm profoundly deaf in one ear, and I've got such a difference between both ears that no matter what hearing aids I use, I'm not completely hearing able with hearing aids, and I can hear sound but can't localize it. But I'm adjusting to that. So, as for payment, my audiologist has a Wells Fargo Health Advantage card. And since I qualify, it's like a credit card, except it's only for medical appliances. So I qualified to get credit through that. Each hearing aid was about $3,000. Plus, I bought the little box thing that connects with my Oticon that connects my TV. She was paid by Wells Fargo right away. I have 24 months to pay off the price. So every month I'm paying like $273 and something cents to pay it off. And that's worked out well. I've done that with this hearing aid and the previous hearing aid. This is the first one that has Bluetooth, which I love. I did not get the ones with the rechargeable batteries, but what I heard about those was not that they might burn out on me when I was out, which I would not like. But my audiologist said, well, when they're in the case, there's a light that comes on when they're charged. And she says, I figure you're not going to know if the darn red light is on or off, or, you know, what it's doing. So yeah, that's basically what I wanted to say. I don't think I've forgotten anything.
So let me ask you your television device, that, because I have Oticon hearing aids and I haven't bought a television device. How did it connect to the TV through a, do you know how it connects to your television set?
I'm not way technical with that. I didn't connect it, but I bought a smart LG. I can't stand the voice. I didn't know it was going to come with a voice. But it has some speaking capability. It doesn't speak everything. I have an LG TV, like 20 inch or something. It's small, flat screen. I didn't pay a lot for it. And there's a plug that goes with a,
okay,
with a cord. There's a plug that goes somewhere in the back. And then I had to, you know, open up the battery doors on my hearing aids and push a certain button on the device, on the little box, put my hearing aids close to that device. And that basically, you know, would after a while pair them. I like it because I could walk around the whole house, go down to the, you know, basement to laundry and stuff, and I can have the audio of TV.
Are you still able to hear, like, if you're watching it with someone, can you hear both the TV and the person you're watching TV with?
With me, no. I don't believe I'm alone a lot. I don't believe I would be able to do that. I'd be kind of tuning the other person out, probably. I had the same problem the one time I went to audio description to a movie. And first of all, I didn't have a loop, neck loop. The hearing, the earphone thingies were such that I was trying to adjust them so they would fit over the microphones of my hearing aids, which meant they had to be like on top of my head, and they kept falling. And the only way I could get them to stay on was to stick them so that the top, instead of being on the top of my head, they were leaning on top of my glasses frames in the front. And then my friend kept trying to tell me stuff. She's constantly a talker. And I couldn't understand. I'm trying to follow the movie. I can't do both. But I do like the little television thing. The only thing is I have not figured out. I have a Fire Stick, and I do not know how to connect it so that it picks up the Fire Stick, because when I go to HDMI, what I have doesn't work. And so, the person that helped me said, well, you haven't got another place where you can plug anything into anything.
So I have an LG TV. So I'm going to ask you, why do you need a Fire Stick? Because the LG TV plays all the streaming services with audio description. So I'm not sure why you would need a Fire Stick.
I didn't know my TV, my LG, I didn't know that did that. My LG TV is like 4 years old.
Okay.
5 years old. It's old. I mean, it's not recent, but around the same time when I got it, I got a Fire Stick. I also have DirecTV. So I've got like the Fire Stick, the DirecTV.
But if it's a line out, it should work. I would look into that. If it's a line out, it should work regardless of where the sound's coming from.
Yeah, I'm not. I would have to get a person that's more technical than the young person that did what he did with this, because I don't know. But
okay,
there are two people who've spoken already who have hands up, so I don't know how long you want to go.
Let's go. Well, let's go to Sharon next, because Sharon, you've been waiting for a while.
Oh,
sure. Hi.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. and I think we need to stop fairly soon. My question is, this sounds very much like what's been happening with low vision devices, that we've been fighting in ACB to get Medicare to even do a pilot program to pay for them so that people can stay at home and be independent. And to me, it sounds like hearing aids are really in the same category of keeping independence. So I wonder if there's any legislation happening to that effect.
You know, I don't stay on top of that, but you're talking about the durable medical goods that ACB is always advocating for, and I suspect will be soon.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I know that I think AARP is always trying to do something with that, because, again,
AARP.
But I don't know if there's any current legislation, to be honest.
Okay. Because to me, it seems like the same sort of stupid, not having insurance pay for it, when if you have to have help to do everything because you can't hear,
Especially since the studies have shown it lead to depression, it lead to falling, it lead to greater thought processing. I mean, it's going to be more expensive in the long run not to buy you hearing aids.
Exactly right. All right. Do we have anyone else?
We do. We have Barbara and we have Russell.
Okay.
I don't really need to say anything else. It's okay. That's fine.
You sure? Go for it.
Okay. Well, Sharon, what you just said, I totally agree. I mean, I think we would all agree there should be durable medical equipment. My sense is that the powers that be, one of the reasons they approved over-the-counter hearing aids was that for a lot of people who need hearing aids, that'll probably be okay. Mm-hmm. And so then they don't have to pay for it out of Medicare. But for those of us that really need stronger hearing aids and need audiologists, et cetera, they just don't want to pay for that. And some insurance companies will pay for it and some won't. So it's just very tricky.
Do you know what it costs to make a hearing aid? $250. And they mark it up 1,000%. And sell it to the audiologist, much like they do with assistive technology. They'll mark it up 1,000% and sell it to the audiologist, and then the audiologist marks it up, so that they can, and they get 50%, just like, like JAWS doesn't count, cost $1,000 to make, it cost them $10 to copy it every time, But they mark it up because they have government agencies. And so the hearing aids aren't that expensive to make. It's just, for whatever reason, they've been able to get away with this higher price for years now. I think it's because not everybody goes out and buys hearing aids, so the volume isn't there.
Let's go to, because Russell's been waiting, but let's go to Rhonda, because Russell's already spoken once. Go ahead, Rhonda.
Nancy, Rhonda.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Sharon and Carl and Kristen, for this great information. I'm deafblind and have been a long time hearing aid user, and I'm lost without them. The question I have is, has anyone had any experience with using the bone conduction headphones and hearing aids?
Unfortunately, I do not, but I've been thinking about it.
I can say that we do have a lot of consumers that find those bone conduction headphones very useful because they don't fit over your ears, so they don't interfere with hearing aids. So it partially depends on your type of hearing loss, but it's definitely something that works well for some people, so it's worth a try.
And if you know someone that works for Bose, you can buy it at 50% off through them.
Let me ask you this question. Are bone conduction headphones wired or Bluetooth or both?
Most of them are Bluetooth now. I mean, they used to make wired ones, but because everybody's trying to connect to, you know, devices that don't have audio jacks anymore.
Right.
I personally
I was thinking
use
if I went
them,
to a movie.
Yeah. I use them with GPS when I'm out walking around so that my ears are open for environmental sounds.
Well, I was thinking if I got wired once, I could use it, for instance, if I went to the movies and I could crank up my hearing aid to hear the primary audio, right? And then use the bone conduction once to hear the, I may try that.
Yeah.
Okay, Russell, you're next.
Yeah, so I believe that our healthcare system is actually health repair. That's why they won't focus on this, you know, preventative stuff. But also, just be aware that the Lions Club is willing to help help us get hardware, hearing and visual. So keep that in mind. And I had a challenge with my Sonic Innovation hearing aid, and my audiologist wasn't available for 3 days, and they had completely quit. And so, and then I had to go in for a day and sit there and wait for his other customers and all kinds of stuff. So I found the phone number for the company. I called them. They were fantastic. Some of the best customer service I've ever had. And we got them running in about, you know, half an hour. So there's always workarounds. So that's it. Thank you, everybody.
I think that's all the hands.
Hey, wow, this has been amazing. Just amazing. Really, really good. So, and it's so interesting to me because there are people on this call that I personally did not know had hearing loss. Some I did, some I did not. And you know, as Carl mentioned, it's so variable into where, how it affects you and how, whether it affects your speech or it does not or whatever. So I'm really, really grateful for this. I have, and I'm going to ask you this, Carl and Kristen, I saw a fact sheet about hearing aids over the counter that came from David Goldfield's tech list. And I didn't put it out on the announce list because I wanted somebody to check it out who knew more about it than me. Can I send it to you and see if you think it's all right to put out for general consumption?
Sure. I mean, okay. if it comes from David Goldfield, I trust him.
He knows what he does. I always trust what he does.
I trust him too.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and send it out.
Okay. I've saved it for a while. And I thought it was very clear and concise, and a lot of the points that you mentioned, Carl, were on there, you know, about what they can do and what they can't do, and it really stressed that seeing an audiologist was a good thing.